From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. And I'm Jason Dole. I want to thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Well, coming up, residents of Woodridge complain about polluted water with a bad smell coming from Sandberg Creek. A DEC investigation is pointing towards an egg processing facility. Radio Catskill reporter Genevieve Hartnett has the full story coming up in a couple of minutes. Plus, Delaware Currents, the independent publication covering the Delaware River and its watershed, is shutting down after more than a decade of work. Its founder, journalist Meg McGuire, has been a close news partner with Radio Catskill. You may have heard her right here on the local edition or on Radio Chatskill. Well, coming up, Patricio Rubio talks to Meg McGuire about the end of Delaware Currents, the good work that they've done, and the struggles of independent journalism. But first, to get us started, we have an update on yesterday's big legal story that involves New York State corrections. The son of deceased prisoner Robert Brooks is reacting to the split verdict in the trial of three corrections officers charged in connection to his father's homicide last year. One guard was found guilty of second-degree murder for his role in Brooks' beating death at an upstate prison, while two others were acquitted. Robert Brooks Jr. spoke after he joined a rally at the state capitol urging Governor Hochul to sign a prison oversight bill.
It's been a mix of emotions. I've been feeling heartbroken. I felt disappointed. I also feel blessed. And I also feel like tomorrow, I feel possible the change can happen.
Former corrections officer David Kingsley faces 25 years to life in prison. He'll be sentenced in December. Six other prison employees have already pleaded guilty to manslaughter and other charges. New York Governor Kathy Hochul said she isn't satisfied with the split verdict and would like to see more done.
First of all, I'm disappointed by the acquittals in the case. I respect the jury's decision.
Prison rights advocates say Hochul should sign the oversight bill that lawmakers passed after Brooks' death. It would mandate more cameras in prisons. The governor has until the end of the year to act on the bill. In other news, residents of Woodridge, New York, are deeply concerned about increased water pollution in Sandberg Creek. They say that in the last month, the popular fishing area has turned odorous and unusable. A New York State Department of Environmental Conservation investigation points towards a local egg processing facility, and this isn't the first time the business has been in hot water. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett reports.
Water pollution has returned to Sandberg Creek. Just a few weeks ago, residents noticed foul and neon-colored water in the creek in Woodridge, with the smell reportedly traveling all the way downstream to Ellenville. New York State's Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC, responded to these concerns on October 5th and are currently investigating the source. In a statement to Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio, the DEC staff observed a, quote, gray, odorous, turbid discharge from the Newberg Egg facility. While DEC is still investigating the source, they did issue a notice of violation to the Newberg Egg facility on October 8th. Flowing through Sullivan County and intersecting with Ulster, Sandberg Creek is central to fishing in upstate communities. The creek contains wild and largemouth bass and is stocked with over 1,000 brown trout. Newberg Egg Facility has been situated just under a mile off the banks of the creek for over 50 years, but residents started to take notice of pollution coming from the facility in Sandberg Creek and alert the EPA in early 2021. Then, in 2023, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, fined Newberg Egg Processing Corporation $100,000 for dumping excessive amounts of nitrogen, ammonia, phosphorus, and other materials into Sandberg Creek between January 2018 and June 2021. In accordance with the Clean Water Act, Newberg Egg made a promise to take concrete steps towards addressing this problem in the future, even adding a polymer mix and feed system aimed at removing key pollutants. Now, many are questioning what happened to the steps that Newberg Egg promised to make. In a statement to Radio Catskill, Carlos Vega of the EPA Region 2 said, quote, Newberg Egg has complied with the EPA's requirements. In addition to the penalty, Newberg Egg upgraded its pretreatment of its wastewater process to reduce the impacts of the Woodridge Village Wastewater Treatment Plant. Water quality regulations have been loosened nationwide under the Trump administration, most notably the EPA's May 2025 decision to delay compliance deadlines monitoring forever chemicals in drinking water, pushing the deadline back from 2029 to 2031. When asked if decisions like these were to blame for the Sandburg Creek pollution, Vega said, quote, "The specific regulations that the EPA enforced in this case have not been changed. Newberg Egg Processing Corporation has not responded to Radio Catskill's request for comment at this time." In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It's The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dolp. For more than a decade, Delaware Currents has been a trusted, independent voice covering one of our region's most vital natural resources, the Delaware River and its watershed. Founded by journalist Meg McGuire, the online publication has shined a light on the people, policies, and places that shape the river's future. From drinking water issues and dam management to environmental justice and the communities that depend on this shared resource. But after 10 years of in-depth nonprofit journalism, Delaware Currents will shut down at the end of this year. Recently, Meg McGuire spoke with Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio about how Delaware Currents began, the stories that she's most proud of, the challenges of sustaining independent local journalism, and what led to the difficult decision to bring the publication to a close.
Meg, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Like I said, when I heard this news through the newsletter that it was shutting down, it was very saddened to hear that just because not only because we use you so much, but you were like the main reporter on the Delaware watershed, the person that I turned to see what was going on to the watershed. Before we get into, you know, the reasons why Delaware Currents is shutting down, I just wanted to hear from you, how did Delaware Currents start? Did you find that there was a missing coverage of the Delaware watershed, and you wanted to sort of fill that gap in there, or how did it all start?
Well, if you might remember that I used to be the managing editor at the Times Herald Record in Middletown, New York, and like so many people that are involved in legacy newsrooms, I lost my job. I spent some time teaching, but I very much wanted to remain in journalism, feeling like, especially environmental journalism, was one of the places that they were really cutting reporters left, right, and center. So I thought I could be a freelance environmental journalist, and I reached out to several different news organizations up and down the Delaware, and no one was interested in buying freelance articles. And someone suggested that I reach out to the City University of New York's Graduate School in Journalism. They were running what they called a solopreneur graduate course, launching people into this web universe. And I joined a little trepidatiously because I certainly didn't want to set up a website. That seemed to be way far beyond my meager abilities. But that's exactly what happened. It was not sort of a full-time thing, but over the course of 6 months, I got lots of insight from lots of smart people. And eventually, as a result of that, set up Delaware Currents. And what I have said over and over again over these past 10 years, when I started Delaware Currents, I knew about writing and editing because that was my whole shtick. But there are two other, you know, legs to this stool, which is technology and fundraising. And technology has never been my strong suit, and Lord only knows, not fundraising either. But those are the crucial parts to sustaining a viable website. But undeterred, I did start Delaware Currents. Now it's 10 years ago this past July, August. And one of the things that was shocking to me was there was one, only one, environmental reporter in the whole of the watershed, and that's a gentleman who's still working, Frank Coomer, at the Philadelphia Inquirer. But by the very nature of it being, even though it's a large paper and its reach is quite broad, it doesn't reach all the way up into the watershed, and it doesn't reach all the way down to the bay, and it only maybe touches the, you know, some of the Jersey situation sort of towards the shore, but just really whatever's due east of Philly. And it just struck me that this is a watershed that's too important for too many people to not have its own dedicated coverage. And so that's what I started doing. Now, when I started, I had not ever been an environmental reporter. It was just, I was drawn to it because I felt it was such an important area. I also felt 10 years ago, I was of the opinion that although there were some people who didn't think that climate change was human caused, most people thought it was human caused. And the people that didn't, well, I don't necessarily have to talk to them about climate change. I can talk to them about water. I can talk to them about water quality and water supply. And it felt like to me that that would cut through everything. Everyone is interested in getting clean water for themselves and their family. And everyone was interested in preventing floods and droughts. So that was very much the scope of my thinking, is let's focus on the watershed, let's focus on its works. And one of the things that's so fascinating for me, like I thought, okay, I can write stories about Delaware. There it is. It's a river. I had no idea how much management goes into that river, or our river, I should say. And so the last 10 years has been crash course in understanding the river and its watershed, its people, its industries, its problems, its promises. It's been just a fascinating ride.
Right. And you talked a little bit about some of the challenges you faced when you're starting off was to find funding, I guess, because you were doing this for free for a while.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Because I am so gifted at looking after my bottom line. Yeah, that's what it was. For 3 or 4 years, there was no funding. I was still learning how to even write that there was. In fact, I deliberately started it as a not-for-profit because it seemed as though there would be more funding available for not-for-profits. And so for a good long while, I was basically shoring up Delaware Currents with my meager pension funds, which is probably not wise financial decision. But then when I was about to throw in the towel, I discovered something called Newsmatch, and some of your listeners may know about Newsmatch. It's this process where the very big funders in the journalism universe will give money to the Institute for Nonprofit News for them to give to its members. And the process is that for every dollar that I raise from private citizens in the month of November and December, it is matched by this Newsmatch funding up to a certain limit. Now, when I started it, it was probably 7,000. I mean, I think it might be as much as 13,000. Well, that meant the world of difference to me for the next few years. I get 7,000 from readers, and then I get another 7,000 from Newsmatch. So now I'm not digging into my back pocket quite so much. That let me last long enough that I was able to attract the attention of the William Penn Foundation. They were in sort of the middle of a 10-year focus on the health of the watershed because they were very concerned about Philadelphia's water supply. And one of the things that's remarkable about what William Penn did, they didn't just look upriver, which would be the logical place for them to look for making sure that Philadelphia had the right sort of clean water. They looked across into New Jersey and started looking at some of the sub-watersheds of the Delaware. And essentially, they looked up and down the river and found 8 different sub-watersheds that they thought it would be useful to focus on. And what they did is they gathered the various advocacy groups and environmental groups together into a unit to work on these sub-watersheds. And the thing that was so cool about that was that since William Penn was funding these places were no longer competing against each other for funding. So suddenly a lot of the walls that had existed between these various organizations, which are all interested in the health of the river, some of the walls came down, and these agencies and organizations or whatever were able to work together, which was quite extraordinary. But then it's what foundations do. They stay interested in something for 10 years and then they want to change their focus. And what they changed their focus to was Philly. And as Philly is one of our country's poorest cities, you can't really argue with the foundation focusing on Philly. And that's what they've done for, I think, a year and a half now. But they've always been, I think, very gracious. And they certainly encouraged me to look at the different possibilities for proposals. But as I have explained to people, it's like, I'm not going to focus on Philly. That is not the point of Delaware Currents. The point of Delaware Currents is to focus on the whole 330 miles of the Delaware River, to see it as an entity, a machine that gives us our water. And I wouldn't want to focus on Philly. I never focused terribly strongly on Philly anyway, because I know that Philly does have its own news media. There are any number of news sites, some online and some legacy newsrooms that focus and do a great job on Philly. So I was never that interested to focus on Philly, and I didn't see a reason to change the point of Delaware Currents by focusing on Philly. So that was about, I probably figured out maybe about a year ago that they were not likely to fund me, and I had reached out to a lot of different places, tried to get money, didn't get the money. And so I am not going to go back to what I was 10 years ago when I was trying to fund this project with the money out of my own pocket. I don't feel that that's smart. I think I have a track record by now. I didn't have when I started out. I think I've provided a valuable service. And if the people that fund not-for-profits like me don't see it or don't have the availability for funding, then that means it's the end of the line for me, for this part of my life anyway.
Like I said, we've always appreciated you here in Radio Catskill, the news you gave us. It really gave us, I felt like, an insight into the watershed. You taught me so many much things, things that I didn't know before, learning about the river. And I said the management of the river is a huge industry within itself. I was wondering, when you announced the closure of Delaware Currents, is there an article or a moment that you're most proud of at Delaware Currents? And what comes first to mind and why?
The combination of the little and the large profiles of individual people, maybe Port Jervis's recent cardboard boat race. That's not sweeping and whatever, but it's enjoyable and entertaining. So I like having something like that, along with the story that I recently did on some of the, like, we know some of the toxic substances that pour into the river from the land. And I spent some time with some of the smart people at the Delaware River Basin Commission, and they walked me through all the other ones that we could be worried about, you know. And that was a very science-based story that was very, you know, it was not an easy read, but that was important to offer to people to help them understand that plastics are a problem. Yes. Salt is a growing problem. Yes. All the PFAS family is a problem, but they are not all we have to worry about. So that was good. I think overarching, maybe it's odd that I started Delaware Currents as we were becoming concerned about the issue of dissolved oxygen in the lower river, like south of Trenton. The focus of that interest was spurred by the fact that the two species of sturgeon that frequent our waters are endangered. And if they can't get enough dissolved oxygen, because obviously fish breathe oxygen just like we do, except instead of lungs, they have gills, and they breathe dissolved oxygen in the water. The scientists were finding that they were having a hard time dealing with the lack of dissolved oxygen in the river, especially during certain times of the year. Dissolved oxygen is more plentiful when the water runs freely and clear and on the cold side. So people north of Trenton generally don't have a dissolved oxygen problem because the waters are clean and cold, especially when way up by you. The reservoirs they provide abundant clean, cold water, which is why there's a trout fishing industry there now. But the plight of the sturgeon was taken up by the DRBC. DRBC is a bunch of scientists and engineers. They moved, according to some people, too slowly. So the Delaware Riverkeeper was involved. And eventually what happened is the Riverkeeper petitioned the EPA to take over the process because they thought that would be quicker. The EPA took over the process, much to everyone's surprise. And then when the EPA changed hands from the Biden administration to the Trump administration, previous rules that had been proposed by the EPA, we all thought, well, that's not going to fly, because this administration has not shown itself to be particularly friendly to increased regulations for environmental quality. But oddly enough, now it's just, I think it's about 6 weeks ago, the EPA did exactly that. They just approved the regulations that were proposed by the Biden administration. They didn't say that, of course. But now there's a significant win for the cleanliness of the river. And if anyone is interested in that story, there's a lot more to it. on my site, there's a thing called special projects. And in there, there's a link to probably about 15 or 20 stories that focus on this particular issue. So it's not something that I had intended, but one of the things within the first year or two I started reporting on was this dissolved oxygen problem. And now we've come full circle with the issue having been surprisingly resolved to favor the sturgeon. Now, the wrinkle in that, of course, there's always a wrinkle. In order to get the better dissolved oxygen in that lower port of it's really the urban corridor from Trenton, maybe Philly, Camden, down to Wilmington, the wastewater treatment plants have to step up their processing of nitrogen. And that could cost money. And those communities are not exactly flush with money. And the question remains how quickly they'll be able to actually, you know, make that the waters that they end up dumping into the river to be cleaner or clean enough to allow dissolved oxygen to stay in the river for the fish's benefit.
It's like the story of Delaware Currents and everything that's going on. It just seems like your work and the work that you've done for Delaware Currents is so important, and we all obviously wish it was all continuing. But I think it's the story also a larger picture of what's happening now across the board with nonprofits and things are being cut.
Yes.
And
yes,
it's a tragedy.
I mean, I certainly think of the situation with NPR is terrible. You know, there's so many ways in which we're cutting off our nose to spite our face, right. That there's so much good work. I mean, I believe quite honestly that, you know, if you'd asked me 6 months ago, I would have said we have a lot more work to do to get the Delaware River as clean as possible. A lot more work, especially in the era of climate change, to be on our guard and to figure out what we need to do for flooding, because that's going to increase. And then we have been told by lots of scientists that the outlook for climate change in this part of the world is more rain when it rains and less rain when it doesn't. So we could have this pendulum swing between droughts and floods. And in order to prepare for that, you need sort of like significant investment in infrastructure. Where is that going to come from? And who's going to be minding the store? It is disheartening on so many levels. I think of, obviously, there are marquee departments that are seriously under fire, but people like the National Park Service, these are people who have dedicated themselves to working in the Park Service, which are many people consider like a jewel in the crown of our American society. And yet, willy-nilly, cut, furloughed, early retirement, you know, and I think I wrote in last week's newsletter, the thing that has it has really come to the fore for me that although I feel badly for me and certainly for, you know, news and information about the Delaware River not getting out to as many people as it could, I am keenly aware that there's so many people who are involved in other sorts of transitions, not of their choosing. Now, you could say not getting funding was not exactly not of my choosing, but me deciding to end is my decision. But there are people who like walked into work one day and found out they weren't going to have a job. And I keep on thinking of families who are without a salary or without health insurance. It's just remarkable. And I know there's a lot of people who are concerned with the size of the federal government, but I think what we've done over the last 6 months or so is a sort of a willy-nilly cut it wherever we feel like it's a good idea. And not at all with a way to understand what the impacts of the cuts are and the communities that are likely to be really badly affected by them, especially people who don't have a lot of money to throw around at the best of times. Right. So you're right. It's hard times all over.
Yeah. Now, you know, I want to look into the future. You mentioned, you know, you're closing this chapter. You're not closing the book; just closing this chapter right now. So, what are the plans for you, both personally and professionally, if you would like to say?
I don't know yet. The one thing that I'm starting to do or starting to think about is I send out a weekly newsletter for Delaware Currents. By the time January rolls around, that newsletter is going to be it's changing already. there's going to be more of a focus on other aspects of life. Like, as I said, the last one was focused on transitions, and there may be, you know, there might be more sort of essays, you know, a little bit more opinion creeping in. There was a time when I was first thinking about shutting down Delaware Currents, I was looking forward to not being a 501c3, because then I could speak my mind. And I wanted to rant and rave about this administration. But the truth is, there are a lot of really smart people who are doing very smart ranting and raving about this administration. And I'm not sure that one more voice is needed for that. I'm not sure where I am needed. And I think I need to take a little time and figure that out. I know I can write. And so as a writer, there might be things that I should write about that might help people or might matter to people. And that might be something that I'm looking for. But stay tuned at least until December 31st. The newsletter, we're still doing stories, maybe not quite so many. I tend to think the image I'm going for is I've always been at a mad gallop with Delaware Currents, and we've slowed to a canter. And by sometime in the middle of November, we'll have slowed to a trot. And by December, it'll be a walk. But I'm very proud of the fact that any number of people have approached me with different ideas about what I could do with my skills, which is great. And I'll just have to sort of wait and see what seems to make the most sense and what's the best fit.
Right. And then this is on the heels, of you were honored, right? Recently honored with the Excellence in New Jersey Local News Award.
In New Jersey Local News. And then just this past Thursday, Chris and I went over to Harrisburg. The Pennsylvania News Media Association honored us with Delaware Currents and its writers with 5 different awards. Chris and I got first place for things, and I got a second place for something, and Kyle Bagenstos and Lauren Yates, 2 of our freelancers, also got second place for work they've done. So it feels like I feel like I'm going out with a bang.
You're going on out on top.
Yes. This is something one of my friends was, because I, as you might imagine, I'm sounding quite upbeat right now, but inside sometimes there's a little bit of little anxiety and a little sadness and maybe even some anger. But somebody said, you just gotta act like you worked on it 10 years, you won the pennant, you put the pennant on your wall, and you're proud of it, and you walk away. And I'm like, I am aiming to do exactly that. I'm aiming to be proud of the work that Delaware Currents and all the people who helped me. I'm looking to be proud of that and to walk into whatever the next chapter will be with my head held high.
Yeah, definitely. Well said. Well, I've always said you can't keep a good journalist down, and I know maybe the itch will come back afterwards. You said that you have the newsletter. This will be some kind of outlet for you to put your skills to use to write, and especially with things going on and how some regulations are being pulled back already. So,
yes, that's probably the way it's going to go. And, for all I know, there might be yet one more story that you'll want to talk to me about. So I'm sure we will talk again before December 31st.
Oh, yeah. That's how definitely I was going to close it out. I don't think this is the last time we heard from you for this year. Definitely, Delaware Currents is still around until December 31st. And I'm sure there will be stories down the pike that we would love to talk to you about. So, again, Meg, I will say thank you on the behalf of everyone at Radio Catskill. Thank you for all the work that you have done for the Delaware watershed. It's not only important work for journalism, but it's important work for the environment and everyone's lives here who depend on the river, whether they know it or not.
Good point, Patricio. Good point. Yes. Okay.
All right.
Thanks very much for being interested and for the care that you've expressed. I appreciate it.
You got it, Meg. Thank you so much and take care.
Okay.
And keep in touch, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Okay. Bye-bye.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. I'm Jason Dole, and that's it for the Local Edition. I want to thank you so much for being here with me. And I want to send a big thanks out to everyone that helped us end our fall fund drive in record time. This is the most we've ever raised in a fundraiser in that short of a time. And it just meant a lot to see all that support. So thank you to everybody. If you are one of the folks that gave, remember you can still give at wjffradio.org. Stay with us because Music Emporium with Mr. Kusar Grace is coming right up at 7. But before that, we've got more news on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.